together was, has it been 3 weeks now? So we're finishing up 2 Samuel. We finished up 1 Samuel a while back. So we're in 2 Samuel. We looked at the first few parts of David's mighty men. I'm just going to read through the rest of this list. There's nothing super, super significant for our purposes in the list of names except for a couple. And so we'll go down through there and just make a couple of comments about things. So we are picking up with verse 18, which is right around where we left off. We talked about these three other guys and some lessons to draw from them, refusing to give up ground and continuing the fight even when you're tired. And so now we're going to look at verse 18 of chapter 23. Now Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was chief of the 30, and he wielded his spear against 300 men and killed them, and won a name beside the three. He was most renowned of the 30 and became their commander, but he did not attain to the three. So the writer is setting up for us this hierarchy of people. There were the three mightiest men that were listed first in this chapter. Josheb-Bashabeth, the Tachmonite, he's chief of the three. And then Eleazar, the son of Dodo. And then Shammah, the son of Agi, the Harite. Those are the three top men. And then below them is Abishai, the brother of Joab. And he's going to be chief of the next group, which is the 30. So just like when Jesus had his ministry, we kept seeing references to the 12 regarding the disciples. Now we're going to see references to the 30, which are 30 of David's mightiest men. So verse 20, Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was a valiant man of Kabzeel, a doer of great deeds. He struck down 2 Ariels of Moab. He also went down and struck down a lion in a pit on a day when snow had fallen. We printed off here a couple of weeks ago all the references to snow in the Bible. This is one of them. There's only a handful of them, about 20-some. And so it was a significant thing when snow fell in Israel. It's not unheard of, but it's also not quite as common as it is here in northern Illinois to get snowfall. And so on a day when snow had fallen, this guy went down into a pit and killed a lion. So anybody want to brave a lion? I don't know. Yeah, maybe if I have a gun with me, right? I don't think he did. But anyway, he killed this lion. And he struck down an Egyptian, a handsome man. The Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but Benaiah went down to him with a staff, snatched the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and killed him with his own spear. How do you like that? Get killed with your own weapon. The thing you think is going to protect you, you turn around and use it against you, the enemy. So that's a pretty significant feat as well. These things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and won a name beside the three mighty men. He was renowned among the 30, but he did not attain to the three. And David set him over his bodyguard. So the rest of the list here, Asahel, the brother of Joab, was one of the 30. Anybody remember anything about Asahel? Nope. He died in battle. He's listed as one of David's 30 mighty men, but he died pretty early in David's reign when David was fighting against Ishbosheth. This is the guy that was, he was very fleet-footed, very fast, and so he's chasing after the commander of Ishbosheth's army. And the commander of Ishbosheth's army said, "Hey, turn around. How could I face your brother if I have to kill you?" And Asahel refused, and so the man killed him. It says he threw the spear behind him and impaled Asahel, and so that was the end of him. But I guess aside from that one act of not wanting to turn around, we can at least say Asahel was a man of determination. So he was one of the 30. Elhanan, the son of Dodo of Bethlehem, Shammah of Harod, Elika of Harod, Helez the Pelite, Ira the son of Ikesh of Tekoa, Abiezer of Anathoth. We're going to see a couple of these town names show up later in history. Anybody know somebody else that came from Anathoth? Jeremiah the prophet. It's one of the people that lived in Anathoth. Mebunai, the Hushathite, Zalman, the Ahohite, Maharai of Netopha, Heleb, the son of Baanah of Netopha, Ittai, the son of Ribai of Gibeah of the people of Benjamin, Benaiah of Piriathon, Hidai of the brooks of Gaash, Abiel Ablan, the Arbathite. There you go, Ethan, Arba. He's an Arbathite. Azvamath of Bahurim, Elihba, the Shealbanite, the sons of Joshin, Jonathan, Shama the Harite, Ahiam, the son of Sharar, the Harahite, Eliphet, the son of Abishai of Maacah, Eliam, the son of Ahithophel of Gilo. Anybody recognize that name? Yes. I hope she doesn't know why. Ahithophel is the name to focus on there. We should know Ahithophel because he was one of the counselors that sided with Absalom in his rebellion. Okay. Now, Eliakim is significant. He's the son of Ahithophel because Eliakim is the wife, or sorry, is the father of Bathsheba. When David inquires, who is that gal? They say, is that not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliakim, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? And so not only was Uriah the Hittite, we see his name last on the list here, Uriah the Hittite was one of David's men, but so was Bathsheba's dad. It was a very personal thing that David did. It was not just some disconnected, disjointed affair. He knew these people, and so as soon as somebody mentioned who the girl was, he knew who she was. That's probably why he felt somewhat free to invite her over. Very, very personal stuff. Hezro of Carmel, Perari the Arbite, Egal the son of Nathan of Zobah, Bani the Gadite, Zelek the Ammonite, Naharai of Beeroth, the armor bearer of Joab, the son of Zariah, Ira the Ithrite, Gerib the Ithrite, and Uriah the Hittite, 37 in all. So there is David's commanders, his heroes, the people that he surrounded himself with in order to make his kingdom great. But then we begin in chapter 24, and this is what we actually have listed on our schedule for tonight. And so we'll dive into this section. Because again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Why does it say again? Because it happened before. Yep, this is not the first time. Remember, towards the end of David's life, the chronicler begins grouping these incidents in which David did what was wrong in the eyes of the Lord. They all tended to happen toward the end of David's life, and it's a great example to us of what not to do. It's that oftentimes we get to the end of the race, and you start getting tired, and that's when you start to give up and you start to slack off. When you start to say, well, now I can just coast along, I'm doing okay, and you don't push quite as hard. Well, David let up a little bit in his later years, in his early years. He was a man who fiercely fought to do what was right, to do what was according to God's law. And that doesn't mean that in his end years he still wasn't a man after God's own heart, because he was, but we see him, he started to slip in some areas and let some things go in his life. So it's a reminder to us to keep that fight going. Never, never give up striving to become holy. The Lord was kindled against Israel, and he enticed David against them. Did anybody find that an interesting statement? Who enticed who to do what? The Lord enticed? Wait. Let's back up there. Does God ever entice anybody?
He doesn't tempt you to sin.
Okay. He doesn't tempt us to sin. Okay. He does allow us to.
My version says incited.
Incited? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So here's some different versions. The ESV says the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he incited David. King James says he moved David against them to say, go and number Israel. And the New King James, he moved David against them. And, oh, I don't have that one on there that I really like. But so they all kind of go in the same direction there. Now let's throw a little wrench in the plans here. And let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 21. And somebody can read that one for me. This is the parallel passage, speaking of the same events. And what does it say?
Satan
stood against Israel and incited David to number Israel. Okay, I'm starting to question this Bible thing. Explain this to me. Did the Lord incite David, or did Satan incite David? And if the Lord incited David, how can we claim that, knowing that God never tempts anybody to sin? Because it's going to be apparent that whatever David does here, God is displeased with it. So how can God incite David to do something that God is going to be displeased with? Ah, okay, so you're going to make a grammatical distinction that there is no stated subject other than he. Okay. And you're correct, because in the Hebrew, there's no subject to that verb. It simply says he incited. So you think that we should fill in there that the anger of the Lord was kindled, Satan incited David.
Mm-hmm. Because we have to take the whole Bible all together,
okay,
to know that God cannot and will not do anything wrong.
Right.
And we have to make it fit into that.
Okay. This will be a fun segment for people to just listen to. They might not hear the answers coming out. Any other thoughts?
Understanding something too of God allowing things to happen.
Yeah. Let's pose the question this way. Who tempted Job? Satan did. But isn't God the one that said, hey, have you considered my servant Job? Kind of like push him out in front. He tempted Satan. Yeah. Sure he does, yeah. Yeah. So something similar going on here. Is God using Satan as an agent of temptation in David's life? Tough answers, huh? Tough questions.
Well, the first part of that verse, it says, in King James, it says, and again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And when the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel's enemies, they were killed.
Okay. True. So how does that connect here?
Well, you know, we say that killing is always a sin.
Oh, okay. I see. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun distinction. Why is God allowed to say, go kill that person and I'm not? There it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Murder is when you take a life without the authority to do so. God can never actually murder anybody because he has the right to take life. And he's the only one that has the absolute right to take life. We don't. He has delegated that to us in certain very limited circumstances. So governments have the authority to take life under certain circumstances that God has prescribed. If they do so other than those circumstances, they are committing murder. If we take life outside of those circumstances, then we're committing murder. But God himself cannot commit murder because he has the right to take every life. Right? Because death is a payment for sin. And we have sinned against God. That's why he holds that authority. So so God can say, go kill those people, and it's not murdering. Didn't you do a speech on distinction between killing and murder?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll let you guys chew on that one. We'll probably be in this passage for another week anyway, come around the new year, so think about that. Anyhow, here's what's going on. He incited David against them, saying, go, number Israel and Judah. So this turns out to be the problem. And we'll see that here in a minute. Counting the people. So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army, who was with him, go through all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and number the people, that I may know the number of the people. Now, he says Dan to Beersheba because if you look at your map of Israel, Dan was a city way up here in the north of Israel, and Beersheba is a city way down here in the south of Israel. So saying from Dan to Beersheba is saying number the entire territory of Israel, the whole thing. Sort of like saying from head to toe or from A to Z, right? So that's why he's referencing from Dan to Beersheba. I want everybody numbered. Number the people that I may know the number of the people. Now, this isn't going to be all the people. He's numbering the men of war. He's numbering the people that he has available to call upon in his army. But Joab said to the king, may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times as many as they are, while the eyes of my lord the king still see it. But why does my lord the king delight in this thing? But the king's word prevailed against Joab and the commanders of the army. So it's not just Joab that's against David in this one, right? All the commanders of the army are trying to tell David, what do you need this for? We don't need to number them. So Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. We're going to cover verses 5 and 6 here in just a moment. But down in verse 10, it says, but David's heart struck him after he had numbered the people. And David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. What did David do wrong?
He's relying on the strength of his army rather than the strength of God.
Okay. And on what do you base that conclusion?
Because I've heard you preach it before.
What's that?
Because I've heard you preach.
You've heard me preach it before. Oh, well, then it must be right. Oh, yes.
Well, I think numbering them was not a direct sin.
Nope.
So it must have been the motivation.
Okay.
Cool.
Right. Yeah, we're honestly not in this passage really told what the exact problem was, because in the law, God provided that the people could be numbered. And they had to pay a tax when the numbering happened. And so... We're not told, did David not collect the tax the way he was supposed to? Or was this a heart problem? Was he relying on the strength of his armies rather than the Lord to deliver him in battle? We're just not told. And so while that explanation does fit pretty well, that David was being lifted up in pride, it's also not confirmed definitively one way or the other. All right, whatever it is, and I think that's probably the best explanation of it, that David was turning his heart towards being confident in the size of his army rather than in the power of his God. And so he gets some argument from Joab and from the commanders. Why does my lord delight in this thing? But David presses the issue. And of course, if a king presses the issue, you'd better go along with him, right? Kings aren't used to being disappointed and getting what they want. So Joab is going to number the people. So he gives us a description here in verse 5. It says, they crossed the Jordan and began from Aroer and from the city that is in the middle of the valley toward Gad and on to Jazer. I'm going to take you to our map and show you what's going on here. So we have a big mess of names right up here. Jerusalem is one of them, right about where the hand is at. So Joab crossed the Jordan River here north of the Dead Sea, went south to this city of Aroer. It says pretty clearly in the description that's in the middle of the valley. And I think if you can see, I don't how clear is that coming up there? Yeah, that's pretty clear. You can see right here is what's called a wadi. It's a stream that's carved out a little valley through the rock down towards the Dead Sea. As the rainwater drains off of the highlands over here, and it flows through this wadi and goes down into the Dead Sea. Aroer was situated in that valley right next to the river. It's a great place to get water. So this is where they begin. This is one of the, on the eastern side of Israel, this is the southern border, because right below that is Moab. David had subdued the Moabites, but the Israelites didn't live there. All right? It was still populated with Moabites. Interesting connection between David and Moab. Anybody know? Tim? Nope. Ruth is a Moabite. Yeah, David's grandma. David's grandma comes from Moab. So, did you? Oh, yeah, yeah. So, Joab comes over here to Aroer to begin numbering. Three of the tribes, two and a half, really, of the tribes of Israel settled over here on the eastern side, way back in the conquering of the land. So, toward Gad and on to Jazer. So, they're numbering the tribe of Gad. Then they came to Gilead and to Kadesh in the land of the Hittites. So, they're traveling up north here because this is the land of Gilead. You can see this town here called Jabesh-Gilead. That came up earlier in our narrative.